Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Friday evening, four best-selling children's authors and illustrators will come together for an event that benefits the schools of tornado-ravaged Moore, Oklahoma. Drawn Together, cartoonists benefit Moore school libraries, will raise money to restock school libraries that were destroyed by the May 20th tornadoes. The event is the brainchild of Jeff Kinney, the author-illustrator of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. Kinney asked fellow authors Lincoln Pierce of the Big Nate series, Stefan Pastis of the Timmy Failure, and Dave Pilkey of the Captain Underpants series to join him on a program Friday night at 7 o'clock at the Cox Business Center at the Tulsa Convention Center. There is an admission fee, but that helps raise money for the Moore Public Schools. There'll be autographed books as well as original artwork from the creators of Garfield, Dilbert, and Doonesbury, which will be raffled off. My guest today is Dave Pilkey, the creator of the Captain Underpants series. There are 10 books in that series in all, and he's the author of numerous other children's books as well. And while the Captain Underpants series is his most popular for elementary school boys for the most part, the titles typically involve poop humor. Titles such as The Attack of the Talking Toilets, Perilous Plot of Professor Poopy Pants, or The Wrath of the Wicked Wedgie Woman. The books are good-hearted and emphasize friendship, tolerance, and generosity. He's very popular with young people. Pilkey has other children's series as well and won the Caldecott Honor Award for his traditional picture book, The Paperboy. He'll be one of four author-illustrators that are a part of the event Friday night at the Cox Business Center, which is known as the Tulsa Convention Center, at 7 o'clock. And he joins us today by phone here on Studio Tulsa. Dave Pilkey, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. It's great to be here.
If you're a young boy of a certain age, say second grade, third grade, fourth grade, maybe even fifth grade, you are the author of some of the most subversive material for that particular age in the Captain Underpants series. Give us a sense of how that character came about. In your biography, you write that this was something you were doing since elementary school.
That's right. Yeah, I was doing it ever since second grade. My second grade teacher gave me the idea for Captain Underpants, believe it or not. She was talking in class one day, and she used the word underwear in class, and the whole room just burst out laughing, and she got really mad. She's like, boys and girls, underwear is not funny. And then, of course, we all laughed even harder. And I remember that moment. It was like one of the defining moments of my life. I was looking around the classroom, seeing everyone laughing their head off. And it's like I had this epiphany, kind of like, wow, underwear is really powerful. I got to do something with that. And I think it was that day that I started drawing Captain Underpants.
Really? And so yeah. You drew it all through school, or was it something you dropped and discovered later, or what?
Well, I drew it up until the end of fifth grade, and then I started working on like other types of comics. But Captain Underpants was one of my characters, and I had some other guys like Diaper Man and Dog Man and Water Man. I had a lot of man characters, a lot of superheroes.
What drew you to cartooning in the first place? Were you just a natural talent, or was that something that was the way you loved to express yourself?
I think that's what it was. It was just a natural way for me to express myself. I was never good at sports. I was never, like, as a kid, very social, really. I just like to sort of stay by myself and draw, and that was my way of expressing myself.
In your bio on your webpage, which, by the way, is done as a cartoon, which is very hilarious, you give us a sense, and you actually say this is maybe true, maybe not so true. Said you never really had any teachers that supported what you were doing until you got to college. Is that correct?
Well, I did have one really good teacher in high school. But for the most part, yeah, my teachers, I think I was a class clown, and I was a major disruption in class, and they were not really supportive until I got to college.
And the first time, I guess, a teacher saw your doodles, instead of saying, why are you cartooning in my class, they said, wow, this is really good. You should be a children's author.
That's right. Yeah, that happened in college. She was a freshman English, actually grad student, and she was walking around the class, and she looked down at my notebook, which was just filled with cartoons, and she said, Dave, I'd like to see you after class. And I was like, oh, no, not again. But she said, hey, you're such a good writer, and you're such a good artist. You should do children's books. And believe it or not, I'd never thought of it up to that point. And that's when I started writing my first children's book, actually that semester.
Now, were you a cartoonist on the school newspaper, or was this really something for your own enjoyment?
It was mostly for my own enjoyment, although I did do some cartoons in high school for the school newspaper.
Well, when that idea came about, did you immediately think of Captain Underpants, or was that after several iterations and several starts and stops of going back to this childhood character?
Well, actually, Captain Underpants did not immediately come back to me until I started talking with kids. When my first book came out, I started doing school visits. And so I would go into a gymnasium filled with children, and I would just talk about my childhood. And so, of course, I had to talk about Captain Underpants. And every time I would draw a picture of him on this giant easel, the kids would just, the room would just explode with laughter. You know, this happened 20 or 30 times, and I started thinking, hey, maybe I should bring this guy back.
Well, it does make sense, because Captain Underpants, these Captain Underpants books, they have a limited shelf life for the kids they really, really appeal to. And it's that third, fourth, fifth grade boy that's, you know, into anything gross, you know. And, of course, you have every pun on toilet objects around in this series of books. And I would think as you grew older, you know, oh, that was pretty juvenile. And sort of recapturing that idea of what a kid finds funny was probably an interesting process.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been interesting to me because just recently I've been doing some book tours. And, you know, the Captain Underpants series started in 1997. So a lot of these kids kind of grew up with Captain Underpants. They're in college now. And they're showing up at the book signings, and they're standing next to 7 and 8 year olds, where they're clutching their well loved copies of Captain Underpants with pages missing and the covers torn off. And so I think to a lot of these kids, it's more than just toilet jokes. So many kids come up to me and say, you know, Captain Underpants was my childhood. And thank you. And that's very gratifying to hear that.
Well, for people who are not familiar, if you don't have kids of a certain age, you might not have heard of Captain Underpants. Explain the plots of the Captain Underpants, because it's two regular kids going to school, and Captain Underpants is sort of their hero.
Yeah, the kids are kind of like I was. They're just kind of goofballs. They're like class clowns, and they make their own comic book about a character named Captain Underpants. And then one day they get in huge, huge trouble from a prank, and their principal blackmails them. So to get out of that blackmail, they hypnotize him and they turn him into Captain Underpants.
That's
and
right.
That's where everything just kind of goes crazy after that.
And how many books in that series have you done now?
There have been 10 books so far, and I'm working on the 11th right now.
What was interesting to me, I knew you mainly from my own son, Captain Underpants, of reading those stories with him and laughing a lot, because they're just wonderful, funny, funny kid humor. You know, it's really great.
Thank you.
I was surprised to see that you have a number of other series, including some really beautiful picture books.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you.
Like The Paperboy, for example.
Well, I started out my career doing picture books, and so a lot of them are funny, and there are a handful of serious books, including The Paperboy, which you mentioned.
Was that a big change for you, going from, you know, these beautifully illustrated books back to line cartooning?
Yeah, it was, but, you know, I actually started out doing line cartooning back in grade school, so it's kind of like my career sort of came full circle a little bit. But I'm starting to do picture books again. I'll be doing a picture book next year, so it's really gratifying to be able to work in the field of children's literature because there are so many opportunities for artists.
When you started doing line cartooning, what were your inspirations? Was it the cartoons that are in the newspaper? Because it has more of a sort of college underground look to the Captain Underpants books. You know what I'm saying? That sort of 60s line cartooning style.
Oh, really? I actually never thought of that.
But,
you know, my main inspiration was Charles Schulz. I used to read his Peanuts comics every day, and I was always drawing Charlie Brown and Snoopy. And so I think my style as an artist came from that. And he did a lot of his comics in the 60s. I mean, he worked all through the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, I think. So he was a huge influence on my work, and still is.
Well, it's interesting because your style is a little more chaotic, it seems like. There's always lots of things going on, whereas, you know, Schulz is very simple, clean, and, you know, sparse, really.
Mine's a little crazier. I guess he was a jumping-off point for me, and then I kind of put my own spin on it.
Well, they're really funny books. My guest today is Dave Pilkey. He is a author and illustrator. He'll be part of four author illustrators that are joining up for a special fundraising event to help the victims of Moore. It's an event called Drawn Together, Cartoonists Benefit Moore Oklahoma School Libraries. It'll be in Tulsa Friday night at the Cox Business Center. The doors open at 6. The program runs from 7 to 9. All four cartoonists, which include Jeff Kenney, who is the author-illustrator of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Lincoln Pierce of the Big Nate series, Stephen Pastis of Timmy Failure, will talk about their work. And there will also be some special raffling off comic prints from Jim Davis, Scott Adams, Gary Trudeau. That's Doonesbury, Dilbert, and Garfield, for those who are not familiar with that. And again, it all benefits the public libraries in Moore. And it's being sponsored by the Tulsa Library. And Dave Pilkey is my guest today here on the Studio Tulsa. Earlier you were talking about the number of opportunities for illustrators of young adult and young children's literature. In many ways, you know, when you think about it for a cartoonist, you think this is kind of the end of the era because, you know, newspapers are shutting down cartoons, the daily cartoons, which were sort of the staple and probably the inspiration for this whole generation of cartoonists. But there's so many new opportunities. In many ways, it's sort of a new golden age. You know, you have everything from graphic novels that are increasingly becoming popular to books like yours and the series that continue for young kids as well as even adults. I mean, adults are loving graphic novels today.
Right,
graphic
right.
stories. Would you say that it is a golden age? I mean, how do you view that?
Well, I think you're right. It definitely is changing with the newspapers kind of disappearing across the country. But I think there is a great deal of opportunity for artists and cartoonists, especially, to get their work out now that there's, you know, that we have the internet and there's people are self-publishing on the internet and there's self-publishing through Amazon.com and things like that. There's so many opportunities. It's just like for filmmakers. You can buy a video camera for $20 and put your movies on YouTube. But there's a lot of different, everything's changing, but I think the amount of opportunities is actually growing.
Earlier, you know, when you came up with the idea of doing a Captain Underpants book after showing the character off in some of your school events, you were a traditional book author illustrator for young children. Did your publishers, what was their reaction to Captain Underpants? Did they get it immediately? Or were they going, why would you do this? You know, you were to do such beautiful illustrations. what was the reaction?
It was mixed, I think, initially. My editor really got it. She completely understood it. And some of the people at Scholastic initially were a little nervous about it, but I had a lot of support through Scholastic book fairs. It's run by a man named Alan Boyko, and when he saw Captain Underpants, he was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be a huge, huge hit, and we had to, you know, order a million copies. And I think Scholastic, the support of Scholastic book fairs is really what helped to launch Captain Underpants.
Mm-hmm. And because they're ubiquitous at the school book fairs.
Yeah. I think Mr. Boyko, when he saw the book in its initial stages, with just a few drawings, and so he knew that it was going to be very appealing to a certain demographic of kids. And fortunately for me, that panned out. He was right.
Do you ever get any feedback from teachers? Because, you know, the Captain Underpants books basically celebrate everything teachers try to tamp down in the classroom, you know. That sort of elementary fascination with potty and everything having to do with grossness that kids sort of exhibit in those elementary grades.
Yeah, well, I was actually very surprised. I thought that the teachers might not be very open to it, but I hear from time and time again from teachers and librarians who are using the books in classrooms with kids that they're having great success with kids, and it's not causing pandemonium like I thought it might. That the kids are really responding to it, especially reluctant readers, kids, you know, boys and girls who don't like to read so much. For some reason, they latch onto Captain Underpants, and not only does it inspire them to read and move on to other books, but it also inspires them to pick up a pen or a pencil and write their own stories and start making their own comics, too.
And I think that must be really gratifying. It's because you've aged out of your audience, where now there's some of these first readers are adults now or young adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I imagine it would be very gratifying to hear from kids who would say, you know, I didn't like to read till I read your books.
Yeah, that's one thing that I hear a lot from parents and grandparents. And I never get tired of hearing that, because as a kid, I had a lot of problems with reading. And it was such a challenge for me. And I just remember how defeated I felt, you know, just trying so hard to read just as well as everyone else, and I just couldn't seem to pull it off. And when I hear that some kid who hated to read or would never pick up a book, suddenly now they picked up Captain Underpants and they got hooked, and now they're reading Paradise Lost or something, you know, they've moved on to other things. That was kind of my hope, that almost the Captain Underpants books would be sort of a gateway to bigger and better things.
You know, it's kind of interesting how reading editions for young people have changed, because in our parents' generation, illustrated books were a big part of that growing up. You know, if you're going to read Treasure Island, they're going to be illustrations. You know, even though it was only maybe 8 pages of illustrations, you know, it's like you would read a section and all of a sudden you had that picture to sort of reinforce what you'd been reading.
Right, right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, by the time you and I are kids in the 70s, that had all gone away. And now we're finding that, you know, illustration helps kids, especially the kids that don't take to reading naturally. That's a great way to help introduce this world of reading to them. It's just an extra little help to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think they, for kids, especially for kids who have issues with reading or problems or illustrations give them contextual clues to the meanings of the words, and I think it really does help with reading comprehension.
Well, my guest today is Dave Pilkey. He is the author of the Captain Underpants series of books, as well as many other books of children's literature. He is one of 4 author illustrators that will be at the Drawn Together event. Now, Jeff Kinney, the author illustrator of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, came up with this idea. Talk about how you got involved.
It was just kind of out of the blue. Jeff sent me an email, and he asked me if I'd like to be part of it. And, of course, I was like, said, of course, I'm in. This is great. It was kind of funny. When he emailed me, he wrote, "Hi, Dave, I'm Jeff Kinney. I'm the author of the Diary of the Wimpy Kid books," which I thought was kind of funny, you know. Like saying, "Hi, I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm from Star Wars." You know, you don't need to say that second part. I was like, everybody knows who Jeff Kinney is. But when I'd never met him before, then I talked with him on the phone recently, and he's such a great guy. He's very unassuming, really down to earth, and so of course he'd be like that. You know, he's just a great guy, and such a fabulous opportunity for me to be involved not only with him, but also with Lincoln Purse and Stefan Pastis, who are all 3 of them are writers and artists that I admire so much. And if I wasn't on stage with those guys, I'd be in the audience listening, because I'm such a big fan.
You know, that's something interesting about illustrators. You know, illustrators are somewhat anonymous, really, in the whole world. And it's like, you know, Stephen King would never say, "I'm Stephen King. I wrote all these books," you know, or whatever. But you know, even the biggest selling author illustrators, and I assume when you introduce yourself, you probably say, "Yeah, I'm Dave Pilkey. I do the Captain Underpants series."
Yeah, I guess I do. Yeah, it's like what you said. We're sort of isolated in our own studios, and I'm always surprised when people know who I am by my name. You know, if I'm at a restaurant and somebody sees my credit card and they're like, "Are you the Captain Underpants guy?" It just like blows me away. It's like, you know my name? How did that happen?
I always liked how you started using your spelling of the first name, because you're a David, I would assume, and
yes.
Dave, D-A-V-E, but at some point the E fell off Dave. What?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I used to be a waiter at Pizza Hut, and you know how they have those name tags?
Yes.
They were making a name tag for me with one of those old-fashioned letter press things, with a little red tape, you know, where you go,
chink, chink, yeah, right.
Yeah, just like that, yeah. And it worked out fine until I got to the letter E, and that one was broken for some reason. And so it just said D-A-V, and it just kind of stuck.
You know, a moment ago you were talking about how being an illustrator is such a solitary job where you're basically, you know, in your studio and by yourself an awful lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. I would think it's a little different than being like the daily newspaper cartoonist, where it's like, you know, you got to turn out a whole bunch, and you just have constant deadlines. But is it the same for your world as well, where, you know, it's constant deadlines, and you're constantly saying, okay, you know, where can I take these characters? Where do I come up with new characters? That sort of thing, where it's a very solitary pursuit.
I think it is, but I've never done a newspaper comic, so I probably would not. Probably Stefan Pastis would be the guy to talk to, because he does Pearls Before Swine, which is one of the greatest newspaper comics out there now. It's so funny and so subversive, and he does that every day. Plus, he does. He just started the Timmy Failure series. So I'm really not sure if my job is the same as a newspaper cartoonist as it applies to deadlines, although I know I do have a lot of deadlines. It might not be the same, though.
Now, are you working on several different series concurrently, or how do you operate as far as, like, are you sort of in a Captain Underpants mode for a while, or it's like, well, I think I want to work on, you know, a traditional illustrated book or picture book? How do you go about working your day?
I'm sort of, like you said, in the Captain Underpants mode right now.
Uh-huh.
I'm under contract for two more Captain Underpants books, and I just wrote number 11, and I'm illustrating that now, and I don't see. Number one just came out. It was republished in color. So Captain Underpants is like in full swing right now. And I'm also working on the Ricky Ricotta series.
That's another one of your line drawing.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like Captain Underpants for real little kids. and so I just wrote a new Ricky Ricotta book. And so those are the two series I'm focusing on right now.
Now, earlier you said you wrote the book, then you began illustrating it. A lot of times when we think of cartoonists, especially those when they're starting out, it's sort of a co-equal process. Is it that way for you, or do you really, are you really writing a book first and then, okay, I'm going to do the illustrations later?
Well, when I do the Captain Underpants book, it's more like a traditional book, right? I write the story first,
right,
and then I do the illustrations. But Captain Underpants has a few spin-offs, like Super Diaper Baby, and there's one called Oop and Gluck.
That's right. And those are more like cartoons, aren't they?
Right. They're very much like graphic novels, where it's just one panel after the next for the whole book. And for those, the writing and the drawings kind of happen at the same time.
Yeah. Well, we wish you great success with your continuing work. Again, if you're a parent of a certain age, you know these books because your kids make you read them. And we hope a lot of people come out to support the Moore School Libraries project this Friday at the Cox Business Center. Dave Pilkey, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rich. It was a pleasure.
Dave Pilkey is an author, illustrator, author of numerous children's books, including the 10 books in the Captain Underpants series. He'll be one of four artists, cartoonists, illustrators who will be coming together to help raise money for the Moore, Oklahoma school libraries, which were destroyed in the May 20th tornadoes, in an event titled Drawn Together, which takes place Friday night at the Cox Business Center, the Tulsa Convention Center. Doors open at 6 o'clock. The program runs from 7 to 9. More information at tulsalibrary.org/drawntogether. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Colin Hines.
In a recent study conducted and published by the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, the wisdom of providing welfare to the poor is scrutinized. The people at Cato worry that welfare, and the way it is distributed, create a disincentive for people living in poverty to find gainful employment. Anyone living in poverty in Oklahoma who was to take advantage of all the various welfare programs offered could reap a benefit having the value of $26,764 per year, the authors of the study noted. Oklahoma City's Daily, the Oklahoman, ran an op-ed early September entitled, Welfare Programs in Need of Serious Adjustments. Citing the Cato study, the Oklahoman stated, quote, "The pre-tax value of Oklahoma's welfare benefits was equivalent to employment earnings of $10.81 per hour and amounted to 75.8% of the state's median salary," unquote. The opinion piece concluded by pointing out that it is unfair that people working entry-level jobs while paying taxes and making less than $26,764 a year help subsidize those who won't work. The last paragraph of the editorial reads, quote, "That's an insult to those who work hard and play by the rules, and it doesn't help the truly needy," unquote. The Cato Institute and the Oklahoman stand united on the proposition that the safety net for people living in poverty needs to be scaled back as dramatically as possible, lest this insult should continue in perpetuity. The Oklahoma Policy Institute analyzed the situation in a much different light. At its website, in an article entitled "The Oklahoman's Distorted Case for Cutting the Safety Net," it proposed that, quote, "The Cato Report and the Oklahoman op-ed are premised on two big distortions of the truth," unquote. The first distortion is that Cato and the Oklahoman take it for uncontroverted truth that all people living in poverty are eligible for a global welfare benefit package. Okay, policy points out that no such package exists. Each of the various programs that function to assist those in need have their own unique criteria for eligibility. Some are only for children, others for the elderly, and very little is offered for those in between. OK Policy points out that in Oklahoma, approximately 400,000 people under the age of 65 live in poverty. Therefore, the number of Oklahoma families enrolled in all welfare programs and thus raking in 26 plus grand a year on the backs of those who choose to sweat and toil for a living, quote, "ranges from tiny to non-existent," unquote, as the Oklahoma Policy piece puts it. The second big distortion OK Policy identifies is the idea that welfare functions as an alternative to work. Rather, welfare programs primarily function to supplement the incomes of the working poor who work for companies that do not pay their employees a living wage. Walmart, the largest employer of Oklahomans, is one such offender. OK Policy's piece concludes, quote, "By spreading such a wildly inaccurate story about poverty, the Cato Institute and the Oklahoman have done a disservice to anyone who takes them seriously as a source of information," unquote. These days, it seems that for too many libertarian groups, the urge to vilify the powerless and impoverished is irresistible. Are the Cato people and the editorial page writers at the Oklahoman just being incompetent in their depictions of the working poor? Or are they, in fact, deliberately painting a distorted, make that fabricated, picture here? In either case, it's pretty shameful.
Colin Hines is a local writer, attorney, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. He's also the blogger at Colin Hines Moleskin. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.